Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. We're excited to be with you on another episode of Life, Love, and the Grind. I'm joined by the beautiful Sarah Sadat to my right and Sean Allen somewhere on a lake, I'm imagining. Sean, you with us today?
I'm with you. I'm by a pool today.
Oh, wow. Look at you. So, Sean, tell me, how has your 4th of July weekend been? Tell me some of what you've been doing to kind of keep it somewhat a sense of normalcy amidst what's going on. I know fireworks were non-existent this time around, but people found ways to have fun anyways. What'd you do?
Yeah, you know, I was up north. We did the whole like Fox Lake and boating and everything. So it's been good just hanging with friends. And I mean, this weather's incredible. It's 90 degrees every day. You don't really get that too much out in Illinois. You know, you got to take advantage of it when you do.
You want to hear our colossal failure of plans last night? So seeing that there weren't fireworks in the DuPage area, except for the erratic, sporadic ones coming out of people's yards, we decided to focus on this lunar eclipse that we've been hearing so much about. So we saw this huge bright moon that just, I forget what they call it. What do they call that, Sarah?
I have no clue, but it was just
It was beaming out there. So we went out there and we heard around 10:30 it's going to start eclipsing, but it mockingly became brighter than ever. And I'd say around 11:30 when it should have been what we thought was going to be at least partially eclipsed, like I said, just mockingly bright. So we're going into today trying to figure out and come out of that and figure out something fun to do, but we do have a great show today, Sean.
I'm excited about this guest.
Yeah, I am as well. We actually have the person running for Lieutenant Governor of Indiana, Linda Lawson, who joins us today. She's running on the Democratic ticket. And I got to ask you, Linda, when I think of certain things like positions that really energize and mobilize people, Lieutenant Governor is not necessarily what I think of. However, you came out of retirement for this. Tell me what kind of work and potential comes with this position, should you get it?
Well, frankly, a few administrations ago, the governor, who was Eben Bay at the time, took a whole bunch of responsibilities from the governor and put it on the lieutenant governor's spot. So it's everything from agriculture to tourism to just all those departments throughout the state of Indiana that some are connected and some aren't connected. But the lieutenant governor has the largest staff in government in the state. So I'm going to jump in there and find out who knows what to who and connect the dots.
Well, that sounds great. And I guess I kind of jumped in too with introducing what the lieutenant governor does. But first of all, welcome. And I want to take a moment to ask you, how did you celebrate July 4th? And what were some of the interesting, cool things to do there? I know a lot of the fireworks we did see in Illinois, there's a history of those coming over from the Indiana border. So I imagine that the Indiana fireworks that went off were just spectacular.
Well, communities celebrated, but it wasn't the same size. Like Hammond had four different locations where the city set off fireworks for families who would come and picnic, whatever, but at high schools and on the lakefront. But the rest of the state celebrates all the time because you can buy fireworks anytime you want to in the state of Indiana. That was done legislatively about 15 years ago.
Yes, and I know all about that because yesterday, all during the night, we heard fireworks from every single one of our neighbors. And it was kind of fun until 11 o'clock, Linda, I'm going to tell you that. But man, when it got into like midnight, I was like, all right, already, guys.
Well, but we are happy to support the tax base in Indiana in that regard. I do also want to kind of get into this, Linda. You have been kind of a pioneer in what you've done in a couple different ways. First of all, looking over some of your references, you know, I do a little bit of my background check, just like you did, because you were a police officer in Hammond, Indiana, first female police officer. Tell me kind of what that was like. I imagine kind of being a trailblazer in that setting isn't always easy. My sister was a volunteer firefighter, and she talked about some of the, what's the best way to say it? Some of, gosh, what am I saying? The ribbing that you get, they want you to kind of prove that you can do exactly what they can do. And maybe it's gentle natured. Maybe it's a little bit more like prove to us you belong here. What was it like on the Hammond police force when you started?
They did not want me. They weren't nice. There were articles written in the newspaper. They interviewed police officers' wives to find out how they liked their husbands working with me on afternoon and midnight shift, not days, but midnight.
Wow.
Found condoms in my pockets and sexual devices in my briefcase. My first day on the job, I had Tampax and Kotex taped all over the inside of my squad car. Had my phone number changed a whole bunch the first year I was on the department. I had a 3 and a 5-year-old at home. That first year was really, really brutal. It was horrible.
You know what surprises me with that? I guess I guess it doesn't surprise me so much like what the locker room mentality sometimes can be. But the fact that the community in terms of the newspapers and everyone else kind of picked up on this and sensationalized the divisiveness within maybe the police force is a little bit surprising to me. It almost seemed like a community effort. Tell me how you were able to kind of overcome that, because that's not something anyone wants to have to deal with. Psychologically, I can only imagine what it was like to go to work every day. Nobody likes to go to work necessarily on a typical 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, but then to have to deal with all this stuff, to deal with the community repercussions. Tell me what that was like as a person trying to raise 2 children at the time.
Well, actually, the community was pretty supportive. The newspaper, you know, kept writing newspapers about me being the first female and photographs and stuff like that. And finally, I just told them, no, stop, we're done. You know, I'm here and it's not necessary to do any more articles. And the chief actually came to me and thanked me for that because he was sick of the notoriety, too. And about 4 months later, they hired a second female. We never were allowed to work together. None of the women were allowed to ever work together. So we never had a female in a squad with us, or we never had a female partner, even when in the detective bureau, or, even when, 2 females worked in the juvenile division, we each had separate partners. So, I was just told we gossip too much. And so women shouldn't work together. So it was just.
Yeah, you know, Linda, I'm sitting here and I'm listening to all of this, and I'm a millennial, so I'm kind of like, I'm
she rubs that in whenever she can.
No. The reason why I'm saying this is I'm at awe for every single thing that has kind of come and transpired before me, and all the endurance that you guys have gone through before us, because for us to hear things like this at nowadays, like, it would be unheard of, and to have that equality. Definitely, we're not equals. I mean, there's still that glass ceiling that kind of comes too, but just even having that respect from one another and being allowed to work with other females, I'm just at awe to kind of hear the shift in mentality. What have you how have you kind of bridged that forward, working with who you are and proving yourself time and time again? I mean, I think me as well as some of the other listeners out there would love to hear, you know, how have you transpired and gained that trust in the community? And how has that made you so much more stronger now that you would want to run for lieutenant governor?
That's a lot of questions.
I know.
Oh, God. She does this on occasion. She tends to. And I believe you actually missed a few other steps that Linda did along the way, which we'll talk about as well, which was that she was a state rep in Indiana. And I kind of want to hear about that. We'll start with Sarah's questions about how you were able to kind of overcome the perceived notions. The word I was thinking of earlier was the hazing, right? I mean, we all have, I guess, somewhat minimal hazing in our occupations, but it sounds like you've had quite a bit of it in the law enforcement, at least when starting off. How were you able to overcome that and kind of make a name for yourself?
Well, I'll answer the hazing question right away. When I was first came on the department, our department had a physical hazing, and it was paddling, and it was abusive, and it was really horrible and ugly. And it happened about 14 months after I came on the police department. That's why like my first 14 months were really hard, but I felt like I had to go through the physical hazing because I didn't think that I would ever be accepted if I had. So I did go through the physical hazing about 14 months later. There was, without getting into the weeds, there was women have never really, at my age in the 70s, it's always been a clean house and tidy children and a beautiful yard and a made bed. And that's kind of how we got our recognition. But when women started going into the workforce, we, along with men, our ideals and ideas started to shift towards my workplace, where there would be recognition and a sense of belonging and affection that we would get from the people that we worked with. And it was really hard for me to do that, really, really hard for many reasons. So I did go to the community and I started, you know, getting out of my squad car and going down alleys and talking to people and stopping at their house if they were mowing your yard, or just went out of my way to spend time with individuals that were walking their dog or available to me, where I could just get out of the car and talk to people. And I went back to those families when there was a snowstorm, or do you need a prescription, or can I get you a gallon of milk? And I spent.
So you really emphasized the serve part of to serve and protect. You went out there, it sounds like, and got to know kind of the community, and you found that to be a beneficial aspect of the community policing?
It is the most valuable thing that you can possibly do, is know your community. And I know that you're concerned about my feelings about, you know, criminal justice reform, and I am absolutely, I was doing community policing 15, 20 years before people even talked about it. And I didn't recognize it as that at the time because I just wanted to know my community. And when situations occurred, it's really hard to be hateful to someone if you know them, if you know their kids, and you know kind of what goes on in their household. And so I believe in that. I firmly believe that a community comes first. And in the 90s, things started changing. Our squad cars no longer say protect and serve. And we don't have blue or white vehicles now. They're black with black crash bars. Uniforms now are different. They're more tactical.
I will ask you this. With law enforcement, and this is one of the things I found surprising, after your career, you did retire as captain of the Hammond Police Department. Then you got into lawmaking, which what I found interesting is that you were a Democratic member of the Indiana representatives. And traditionally, I think of law enforcement as skewing kind of conservatively. Has your mentality always been more on the liberal side? Was it what you saw during your time in the police force? What really forced you to think that, you know what, I've done this, I'm kind of in, well, I should ask you, Hammond is probably a liberal area, right? I mean, the whole two counties kind of east of Illinois, it seems like are pretty liberal. And then the rest of the state is relatively red. Is that a fair assessment?
The pockets where there's industry and large urban areas are Democrat in the state. Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indianapolis, Evansville, Terre Haute.
But I'm imagining Hammond was somewhat conservative, or am I completely wrong? Because I'm wondering how you ran in that area on a liberal ticket and then won.
I wouldn't even have considered it a liberal ticket. It's just, you know, Democrat and Republican, and probably 80% of the voters in Lake County are Democrat. So, you know, Hammond's a pretty Democrat area. When I was a kid growing up, almost every family, their father worked at in the oil industry or worked in the steel mills. I mean, there was no other way. I mean, those jobs were so available and they were so plentiful that's where families worked.
So heavily probably a union, union upbringing, union town. And Sean, that's where I'm going to bring you into this conversation, because I know you always talk about the equity that labor brings in. So I'm sure you have a question for Linda as well.
Well, you know, absolutely. You know, I'm interested to, you know, this new world we're in, you know, police are taking a pretty big beating, right? I mean, it's a lot of anti-police rhetoric kind of out there lately. I mean, you've kind of been through it. You know, has the police changed from when you started? I mean, is it going in a better direction, or do you see it? Do you agree with maybe some of the, you know, anti-police rhetoric that's going on? I mean, is there a lot of change that needs to happen? Or I would like to see your opinion, because you've kind of seen it from different kind of the last few decades kind of change.
I'm not anti-police by any means. I think that there are changes that we can make so that our communities grow and our police departments grow, but I am not anti-police at all. I think that there are lots of things that we can do to change, and some of the money should be maybe shifted to an area that maybe local communities can have their needs met, and businesses and best practices and a community-based training at the Law Enforcement Academy. Some of the academy classes need to change and expand. But as a legislator, I will tell you that we have not funded the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy like we should. So there's lots of things that need to change. A statewide database. We need to talk about bias a lot more than we do. We seriously need to start talking about some of the mental health problems. I started seeing deterioration in the mental health community when Reagan closed all of the mental health facilities. And we had a large mental health facility in Hammond, and when it closed, people were living on the street or living in apartments. Young women were living there and inviting people in, not even knowing who they were, no skills. And so mental health is something that needs to be addressed. Law enforcement don't know how to handle those problems. They do the best they can, but there's lots and lots of ways that we can change. But there's lots of things that need to stay the same.
And I think that's probably a good place, Sean, to leave it to get to our commercials, because there are quite a few things we want to talk about when we get back. We do want to talk about your perspective with police unions in Chicago. If you've been following, there's been quite a lot of discussion with the stance on taking a knee. And yesterday in the Tribune, there was an article profiled about a police officer who has withdrawn from the union because of their stance on this. So that is something that we will talk about after this break. But we also want to get into the gentleman on your ticket who's running for governor. We want to learn a little bit more about him as well. So why don't we cut to commercials, and we'll come back with Linda Lawson. Again, you're with Raza Siddiqui, Sar Sadat, and Sean Allen on Life, Love, and the Grind.
This is Lewis Kyra from GWC Injury Lawyers. Now that cannabis is legal in Illinois, an understanding of the law and the risks associated with ingesting cannabis is critically important. Under the Cannabis Act, you can legally ingest marijuana only in a very limited number of places. Not in public, not on government or school premises, and not even in your own condo or apartment if your landlord has a no-smoking policy. A positive test is potentially lethal to your rights in three key areas: employment, work injuries, and driving. So if your employer has a zero-tolerance drug and alcohol policy, you can be terminated if you fail a drug test, even though your cannabis consumption was legal. If you're hurt on the job and test positive for cannabis, the legal presumption is that your accident was caused in part because of the cannabis, and your workers' compensation rights can be totally denied. DUI laws have not changed. Impaired means impaired, and a DUI due to cannabis or alcohol can ruin your career. If you want to indulge in legal THC before you ingest, read up on your rights at gwclaw.com.
Megan Financial is an independent retirement and financial services firm dedicated to the working men and women of organized labor. Megan provides straightforward, custom-fit financial advice and specializes in defined benefit and defined contribution pension plans, as well as participant and retiree health and welfare benefits. Megan Financial has the knowledge and experience to navigate the union member through all phases of life. Call 708-444-1090.
Securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, a broker-dealer and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Office location at 5321 South 94th Avenue, Orland Park, Illinois, 60462.
And Sean Allen will be joining us momentarily. We want to welcome back our guest, Linda Lawson. I'm Raza Siddiqui, joined by Sara Sadat. We are very excited again to talk with the Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor of Indiana. You know, that can't be an easy battle in and of itself in a traditionally red state, but you've been kind of proving yourself to be a pioneer all along. Linda, go ahead and tell us about the person, Woody Myers, that you're running with, and what kind of drew you into coming out of retirement to join with him in trying to be a trailblazer in the Democratic process and the Democratic movement in Indiana.
I never thought I moved to central southern Indiana, Nashville, Indiana. It's about an hour south of Indianapolis, and I was very happy and comfortable. I had a lovely home, and I've got a small lake and 2 acres and my dogs, and I'm involved in the community and the Democrat organization there, and I sit on the merit board, police merit board, and I do some stuff with the election board.
Well, so it sounds like you did have your hands full with a retirement that wasn't so retiree, right? Like you were in the middle of doing a lot of things, but why did you decide to do even more? I mean, being a lieutenant governor or running for that can't be an easy gig. And then when we have a pandemic mixed in, I know the whole fundamentals of campaigning in general have changed. Tell me what kind of challenges that's posed for both yourself and Woody Myers, who I did a little bit of research, and it was interesting to find that he was a physician. He was a health commissioner. So this probably was a pretty adequate time for him to run in terms of knowing how to deal with a pandemic. I know he was on HIV committee federally some years back as well. So kind of tell us a little about him and about what you guys plan to do together.
Woody finally talked me into, along with getting phone calls from other people that I respect, so I could sit down with Woody and have a conversation about whether I was going to leave retirement and work with him. And it was actually after about a 2-hour conversation that he convinced me that it was probably the right thing to do. We're kind of a yin-yang kind of situation.
It's like Sarah and me. We're a co-host and married, and yin-yang, I think, fairly describes it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Has it been working for you guys?
Very much so. Very, very much so. Dr. Myers is a remarkable man. He grew up on the east side of Indianapolis. He was very, very bright and was tested and put into a private school as a elementary student, and was there through junior high and high school, applied for the 5 best universities in the country, went to Stanford, graduated at 19, went to law school, went to Harvard Med as a teenager, late teenager, graduated, went back to Stanford to do his residency and his internship, and ended up in a hospital in San Francisco, and was very instrumental in diagnosing and trying to recognize and understand why all of these young men, these patients, were coming in and dying of something that he and the other doctors had no control over, didn't know what they were looking at, and was contacted by Governor Orr, the state of Indiana, and asked to please come back to Indiana and help them out of a crisis. After 3 times, he finally came back and he agreed to be the health commissioner in the state of Indiana. But what he is most renowned for is sitting in Congress with Ryan White and his mom when the state of Indiana was saying horrible things about this young man who is.
So, you know, I know Ryan White is a name and a case that Indiana and Indiana residents are fairly familiar with, but please do explain to our broader Illinois audience who that is and what the significance of what happened there was.
Well, it was a young man who contacted AIDS from a blood transfusion. He was a hemophiliac. And being a very, very conservative state, and all of the concern and misinformation about the AIDS problem, an epidemic in the United States, many ugly, horrible things were being said by this young man who was not even in his teen years yet. And so That's really the reason why Governor asked Dr. Myers to come back to the state of Indiana and help him solve these problems. And so I believe.
Now, I was a young man when this happened with Ryan White, so I only vaguely recall this, but wasn't there some, with the public school, there was some sentiment that, or in the community, that they didn't want him to return? As I recall, that's what the major crux of this was, that the community did not want him in the school or something to that effect. So is that something
terrible things about this child. They said terrible things about him. They wanted him out of the school. They wanted his parents to take him out of the community. And it was all because of ignorance and not understanding the full story about AIDS and transmission and how Ryan got this disease too, which had nothing to do with sexuality at all. It was a blood transfusion. And Woody testified in Congress with Ryan and his mom and was really pretty instrumental in getting people to understand the AIDS crisis and how to prevent it and how you can get it and how you can't get it. And he is a man that if the state of Indiana in a crisis, I would think this doctor in the house would probably, who's experienced pandemics before, would be a good match for the state of Indiana.
As you did say earlier, Indiana is known to be somewhat of a conservative area with very heavily conservative pockets. I understand from speaking with a mutual friend of both of ours that you had an encounter yourself in the parking lot of a bird feeding establishment. If you could kind of get into that and tell me how you got out of it, because I'll tell you, if I was in a similar situation, I may not have been so lucky to generally have walked out of it. So if you could just share that story, because I did find it to be somewhat humorful because you were able to get out safely.
Well, you know, my daughter and I have lots of bird feeders in my backyard, and my daughter and I had left a farm and tractor store or whatever, a seed store, to buy bird food. And we got right behind my vehicle when Laura was behind me, and I realized that there was a problem in front of me. There was four men who were standing behind the car, the SUV that was next to my vehicle, and they were watching me come to my car. And I realized it wasn't a mistake. I knew that there was a problem brewing. And as soon as I opened the trunk of my SUV, the one guy says he said that no one is going to take away.
I was just going to say, keep in mind that we are FCC regulated, certain words should probably be watched. No. How this proceed? You got me on the edge of my seat. So, I'm imagining four people, SUVs blocking me on the one side, a pickup truck on the other. What'd you do?
Well, I kind of smiled and nodded. I had a mask on, so he couldn't see, but he just was screaming that nobody was going to take away his Second Amendment rights. And so I realized I have three stickers on my car. One is from the Southern Poverty Law Center. One is says vote. And the other one is Indiana Dems. And so I knew we had to get out of there. I sensed right away there was going to be a problem. But I didn't hurry or speed up. I just took my time, unloaded all of the bird food and the tomato plants and whatever. And then he says, I, in very explicit language, said, I have a pistol and I can use it. And shut the gate. And as soon as I closed my trunk, they all scattered. I couldn't get a plate number. I couldn't get anything. He was yelling, though. It was, pretty apparent that anybody around us would have heard what they were saying. But I do know probably if two men had come to the car, that it would have probably escalated and things wouldn't have been nearly as low key as they were. But it was a really, it was a real threatening experience, and it's never happened to me before.
Well, I think if it was Sean Allen, it may have de-escalated. He's a man who's known to be tempered and very logical and keep to himself. Is that about right, Sean? Is that how you would synopsize? Or would this just have escalated for you if it were you and I? Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Sean. And
Sean's having a little bit of technical difficulty.
Okay.
So as we all are during this crazy life that we're living in.
Well, and again, that's something we want to talk about. So Linda, I got to ask you, so these are some of the hearts and minds that, if not change, you got to at least appeal to be successfully the lieutenant governor of Indiana. How do you start this dialogue? How do you let them know that, hey, this is not necessarily our intentions? We can work together with this. I mean, being law enforcement, I'm sure you understand the whole mentality that people believe that this is, you know, a guaranteed right within the Second Amendment. So it's not like you're closed off to this. You completely, I'm sure, understand this. So how do you start that dialogue?
I haven't approached this too much when nobody even asks me these questions. I think that not even because I'm a police officer, but there's certainly groups and organizations, Moms Demand Action out there that are very, very prolific when it comes to gun safety and changing some of the laws that reflect, you know, good ownership of handguns. But I also know that there's people out there that misconstrue, and no one's saying we're taking away your guns. No one has ever said that. But what they do is they say that there's good stewardship and guns should be used for certain purposes, but not for others. And so that's not come up in the dialogue. You know, I've been running with the help of staff to do town hall meetings throughout the state with four or five or up to eight individuals, just to kind of find out what's going on in the state of Indiana, the needs that people have, talking about housing, talking about law enforcement, but also talking about education and talking about the fact that, you know, people in Indiana, many, many people in Indiana haven't even gotten a third employment. So, our Arkansans are putting people to work and allowing them the freedom to be able to, take care of their families and be able to prepare meals and have what they need to be able to survive in a pandemic.
And again, how has this pandemic kind of changed the way that you have been able to campaign? I mean, I'm sure with yourself and the gentleman running for governor, Dr. Myers, it's you got to get around the state, right? I mean, you got to get your names out there. You got to get your ideas out there. You got to really reach out to the community and let them know if you hope to be successful at all. That's all kind of changed with this pandemic. I mean, you see former Vice President Biden, who's basically doing a lot from inside of his home in terms of reaching to the constituency. How have you been able to get your message out, especially in a state where you really do need to persuade people what your values are and what it really means? How are you able to do that?
The same way Joe Biden is. We're doing virtual town halls. We're doing virtual meetings. Spending time with people, but not in a setting where we shake hands and we hug, we social distance, we wear masks. It's the same way everyone is running a campaign right now. In a pandemic like this, you just have to do the best job you can and make sure that you have a following and that you have people that care about you are willing to do as much work the same way that you're doing it. It's through word of mouth, and it's through a virtual meeting is how we're getting the majority of our work out.
I'm going to have to ask you about police unions as well. Being a former police officer yourself, I'm sure you have quite a bunch of experience with this. And you've seen with the Chicago Police Department that there was a statement by the new president that says that the union will not support anyone who kneels down or is overly empathetic with protesters. And just yesterday in a Chicago Tribune article, there was an article about a gentleman who stepped down after writing a letter saying that he fundamentally disagrees with this type of philosophy. I don't know if you had a chance to read that article, but just in general, tell me, where do you find this? Police unions are under a lot of heat right now with what's going on. Tell me what your thoughts are.
I didn't read the article, and I have not kept up with Chicago politics. After moving, 2 years ago away from the region, I pretty much pay attention to what happens in Indianapolis and central Indiana. But as far as the FOP goes, I believe in collective bargaining, and I believe in the fight for their rights. I mean, I can't say that I don't believe in a police union, because I do. I don't know the person who is, whether he was elected or appointed, or I don't know how he got his job as the president, but that's the direction they're going in. I'm surprised by it, to be honest with you.
How have the police unions, Fraternal Order of Polices in Indiana, been to deal with? And kind of tell me how the law enforcement community in general has been to deal with as your campaign goes forward.
I've not been approached by the state FOP at all. The local FOP that I belong to, there's been some pushback on a couple of issues, but I think that we can work some things out and have a conversation about that. And hopefully in the near future, I can have a conversation with the state FOP. I know their attorney, and I know the president, and we've always had a good working relationship, and I've always stood up for law enforcement. So do I believe in some chains? Absolutely. I think that there's a lot we can do, that a community can get together and support law enforcement, and change is good. And so some of that should happen.
Well, that's definitely something that's good to get out there. I know Sarah had a couple of questions as well. Sarah?
Yeah, when Russ is on a roll, I mean, it's very difficult to just even get one word in. So, Linda, you're doing
especially because I mute her mic. Usually, I mute her mic when I'm on a roll, but unmuted it. And Sarah, let's get your questions.
Thank you so much, Russ. You're just phenomenal. One of the questions that I had is with the current situation right now that we find ourselves in, with all the racial injustice that is being brought to us in front of us. I know that this has been a historic problem that we've been facing. Some of the, maybe if you can speak a little bit to some of the systemic changes that you may want to bring forth, or that you have done in the past, being part of an elected body and even being a captain for Hammond.
Well, there's one, I think, thing that we need to do is we need to protect those police whistleblowers. And when something happens, there is that silence that occurs within law enforcement. And I think that the whistleblowers need to be protected. I think we need to ban chokeholds in the United States completely. There's no reason for excessive force. We need to put a lot more funding in the communities and local communities and prior towards their needs, and especially those low-income neighborhoods where there's minority-owned businesses. We need to give them an upper hand. I know classroom stuff at the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy, we need to improve on that. Best practices need to be involved in that. Community-based training needs to be involved in that. Misconduct of police officers should be reported. There needs to be an independent investigation. If something happens in a police department, it needs to be investigated by either the state police or another department. So there's no conflict of interest or favoritism at all there.
So somebody just totally outside of the governor's body, or even the local legislators or the local municipalities, right? So just a totally independent. So I've heard a little bit about this, and you know, there are certain areas like Rockford, for example, was doing something very similar where they had a citizens board kind of elect their chief of police and hold them accountable for what it is that they're going to be doing. So is this something that you may want to look forward to in the next few, if and when you get elected?
Well, you know what? We do have to go to a commercial right now, and then we are going to dialogue a little bit more about this as we come back.
You promise again, my question will be answered at that point?
This is Raza Siddiqui, Sarah Sadat, joined by Linda Lawson, who's on the Democratic ticket in the state of Indiana, running for lieutenant governor. So we do want to kind of get her ideas on a lot of things after these commercial breaks.
Thank you.
Life, Love, and the Grind is proudly sponsored by Rich Lewandowski and our friends at Breaker Press, Chicagoland's top choice for union printing. We're a third-generation family-owned business that has been helping unions and political campaigns win since 1976. We've been involved in hundreds of winning elections, and we get our printed materials to you on time and on budget every time. Whether you're running for the courthouse or the White House, we will take you from concept to design and from print to mail or your supporters' front yards. Breaker Press can help you reach the voters you need. Call Rich at 773-852-5733 or email rich at breakerpress.com. For all of your political printing needs, visit us at breakerpress.com.
If you're joining us, we are Sara Sadat, Raza Siddiqui, and Linda Lawson joining us on Life, Love, and the Grind. If you're watching this on the live stream, you can see that we have Breaker Press's phone number. I do want to emphasize that Rich Lewandowski also does serve the Indiana campaigning community, so make sure to keep that number that's on the bottom of the screen. Always a great guy to go to. But going back to Indiana, we want to go back to Linda Lawson, who's going to be telling us and I got to ask you, Sara did make sure that I got to her question. So let's get to her question first. But then I got to ask a couple of my own.
Okay. So, Linda, just for everyone else who is kind of joining in again, what are some of the structural reforms, like answering back to the citizens, putting a citizens board in for some of the police officers, just a very novel way of getting elected that is not being answered to by your municipal mayors or presidents that are in charge? What are your thoughts on that, Linda?
Well, first of all, politics need to get out of the police department completely. Especially, it's not the young men and women who are working in a squad car. The further you get up in the chain of command, things become more difficult because the appointments are usually made by the mayor. And a lot of political decisions are made that way. So there needs to be a merit board. There needs to be a way that if taking politics out of a police agency is probably one of the best things. I know there's a lot of resistance, but when it comes to being the best department, you should probably get politics out of it completely. But there's so many things that we can do, and funding is one of them, and changing the way we fund police departments, but not defunding in any way, shape, or form, but just putting money in the hands of locals, starting new programs, investing in education, in the barriers to employment, establish statewide database for citizens' complaints. Don't have a police department fire or get rid of an officer and then him hired by another department somewhere. That happens all the time. Best practices in a community. Explicit bias training within officers and departments. One of the things that we should probably do is decriminalize marijuana, make it an infraction, like a speeding ticket or something like that. Eliminate a minor possession for past and future offenses. And certainly legalize marijuana for medicine.
So how has the marijuana debate gone in the state legislature in Indiana? I mean, in Illinois, there has been, and Sara can speak more about this, but there has been more of a decriminalization process. What has it been like in Indiana? And is that even an option? Are there enough progressive-minded people who share your thoughts who would be able to get this going, or how does that fall?
You have to remember the state of Indiana has been run for the last 15 years under a Republican administration with a supermajority in the House and in the Senate. The people who care about decriminalization are the Democrats. The people who care about not putting people in jail and trying to work with them and work in different situations where they are not penalized but are given different options are the Democrats. So working in a state where there's been Republican control and a supermajority in the House and Senate, it eliminates a lot of the things that progressives want to do and a lot of things that they're able to do.
So I got to ask you, you got a kind of an uphill battle, it seems like, right? I mean, supermajorities, Republican administration, a governor who was the lieutenant governor under the current vice president. It seems like there's a pretty institutional establishment of conservatism in your state. How are you and Dr. Myers planning on getting past this institutional conservatism and get a voice out there? What do you think your odds are?
I don't know what our odds are, but I'm going to tell you what, we're two people that work very, very hard. there should always be, you know, a second voice, regardless of what state you live in. There are people who support us 100% and are going to continue to do too, and they're going to use their voice too. We live in the state of Mike Pence, and there's probably nothing good I can say about him. And I can't tell you how hard it has been to overcome a lot of the last 15 years just because of the supermajority. You can't even imagine how difficult it was to work in the General Assembly and not have your voice heard. There are people that live in this state. There are a lot of unions in this state, and there's a lot of people that would like to see change. And I personally believe that Woody and I can do this. We can work hard. We have lots of unions and lots of people and lots of contacts that are going to be working with us and are working with us. And every state deserves to have the two of us, not just one option. So we're going to work as hard as we can to make sure that the people get an opportunity to hear our voice and make their decision about whether they'd like to have our administration as opposed to what's going on now. The interest that we have in housing, the interest we have in public education, the interest in giving teachers what they're worth, it's insurmountable that, you know, that our voice has not been heard, but the people that live in this state certainly have the right and the privilege to have two people that will stand next to them, support unions, support all of those frontline workers, will support the people who deserve good leadership and opportunity.
You know, I can't imagine how that could have been better said. I have this discussion with my wife all the time that as many voices as can be heard need to be heard. I've been a frequent advocate for even third parties and just getting the word out there that, hey, don't make it a partisan issue. Make it an issue that really appeals to people. And you did mention labor, and you did mention how labor is helping you. And we have a lot of labor followers on this radio show. So speak to our union following in general and kind of talk about some of the ways that you have worked with labor throughout this process and how you hope to work with them continuing forward as well.
Well, I don't know. I have stood in the rotunda of the state capitol with 20,000 workers and watched a Republican House and Senate pass right to work and saw the faces of the men and women who are union workers here in the state of Indiana that deserve a lot more than what they got. I left the state of Indiana with House Democrats and stayed in Champaign, Illinois for 6 weeks and protested what was going on in the state of Indiana. We all lost 6 weeks' pay. We all lost lots of time with our families. And we fought as hard as we possibly could and did everything we possibly could to make sure that there is a living wage out there, that unions are protected, and the people who work for unions are protected. Indiana is failing to take care of the people who live in this state. They don't protect their wages. They don't care about a living wage. They would be happy to get by with paying people, you know, $5 an hour. They don't believe that the reason why people's unemployment check is larger than what they've been getting as today as an unemployed worker. And it's all because the formula says when you do the formula that they deserve the amount of money they're getting. The people who are rich on the backs of the people who made them rich, they deserve to have that living wage. They deserve protection. They deserve a retirement package, and they deserve to have a voice. And in the state of Indiana, they just do not listen to union workers.
And that's something that I hope you and the doctor will look to change and give the voices to these hardworking men and women who are out there every day trying to fight for their families and kind of embolden them. And however this turns out, be an advocate for them, because absolutely, you look at around Illinois, and a lot of our listeners are from Illinois, we're kind of surrounded now by this right to work movement. It's kind of turned over, and I believe I'm blanking on which state, but one of the states around us. So it is good to know that there are people fighting for labor in other states as well. Sarah, you had a question as well?
Yeah, so I think before, we don't have a lot of time remaining, but I do want to kind of finish off the conversation that we have going into. You know, coming from Chicago, going into Indiana, the roads and the streets are always a struggle. What is your platform? What's your view on the infrastructure that you may be bringing into Indiana? You spoke a lot about housing. You spoke a lot about equality, you know, baseline education, things like that. What are your thoughts on the local roads and streets, typically that capital infrastructure building projects?
And please keep it limited to one or two sentences because we are running out of time. Sarah gets very ambitious as we start running out of time. So just a real quick thought on that.
Well, roads and transportation are a big issue, especially when you have adjoining states that are so large. I mean, there are lots and lots of people that live in Northwest Indiana that use those same roads that we go to when we leave and go into Illinois. I lived five houses from Illinois for 42 years. I think that, you know, a lot of that is federal dollars and it needs to be spent and for the best for both states. And we need to work collectively to make sure that those things happen so people can transport, you know, goods and services, and they can travel to work and make sure that they've got seats, safe streets and highways that make sure that their travels are safe and gets them where they're going.
We really want to thank you for taking your time on the 4th of July weekend to come and share your thoughts with our audience about what you and Dr. Myers are doing and trying to get the word out there for labor and your platform for the state of Indiana. So thank you for taking that time to speak with us. We really appreciate it. This is Raza Siddiqui, Sarah Sadat, and we were joined today by Linda Lawson, running for Lieutenant Governor of Indiana. Thank you very much, Linda, for your time. We have time for one final closing thought, if you'd like to bring that up.
I would just like to say, as much as the changes that need to take place in the Indiana, we need to remember that they still have the supermajority in the House and Senate. For the governor and lieutenant governor to be able to get things done and help the state of Indiana, we need Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate in the state of Indiana. So if you know anybody that's a Democrat and running out there in the state of Indiana for a state rep position or a senator, go Democrats.
Thank you, Linda, for joining us. Sarah, closing thoughts?
No. If you guys want to find out anything more about Linda Lawson, go ahead and check out her campaign site, as well as, you know, feel free to reach out to her. And the rest of us, you can find us on Life, Love, and the Grind, on Facebook, on YouTube, on pretty much any other platform. Really appreciate your time today. And I think I had a fantastic Independence Day, and I look forward to what the rest of the summer has to offer.
Now get out there and enjoy this beautiful weather, but keep it on WCPT. Take a mobile radio out there. See you guys next week, Sunday. Life, Love, and the Grind.
Bye.